Your theory is crazy, but it's not crazy enough to be true. A quote by Niels Bohr. Why reality cannot be a simulation. That is what I'm going to explain in this episode. But before I get into that, happy holidays, as usual this time of year. I hope you're having a good 2019. This is my last episode of the decade. Sometimes they say that the decade doesn't really end until the end of 2020, but oh well. I'm counting it as the end of the decade now, so this will be the last one of the decade, and then we're starting on a clean slate come next year, and we'll see how that goes. If you'd like to support me on Patreon, you can. Go to patreon.com/actualized. You'll find a link down below to support independent creators like myself. All right, so again, with these silly hats for the holidays, I sometimes wear them. Don't let them fool you and distract you from the seriousness of the topic at hand. This is a meaty topic for you today. I'm going to explain why reality cannot be a simulation. I see a lot of foolishness on YouTube, videos about this topic that are so misguided. You know, it's popular these days because we live in the sort of computer era. That's basically where the 21st century is, and also the 20th century, you know, the information age. So it's popular to speculate about science fiction scenarios about how, oh, what if we're in a matrix? What if we're inside of a computer, virtual reality? What's going to happen in the next 500 years? Like, Leo, what's going to happen when computers become super fast and then there's AIs and virtual reality gets so good? Isn't it almost guaranteed that we're going to be creating really high quality rendered virtual realities and video games, then crawling inside of them? And then, you know, it's just, you know, it's a small leap in logic to just assume that, you know, if video games keep getting better and better and better, in 100 years, our video games are going to be indistinguishable from reality. And then we're going to find a way to interface with that. And then, you know, before you know it, we're inside a computer and bam, we've got the digital singularity. And then this sounds like so profound. This sounds like it's a profound understanding of metaphysics, and it's not. It's actually, it's a joke. It's a joke. And it gets people thinking in the totally wrong direction. And there's this kind of popular trend on YouTube where people discuss philosophy through these flimsy philosophy videos where people just speculate about, oh, well, maybe it is a simulation. Maybe it isn't a simulation. Maybe God exists. Maybe God doesn't exist. What about this? What about that? This is not how I like to do philosophy. I like to do philosophy and get actual answers. And believe it or not, it's possible to do philosophy and get actual, concrete, definitive answers to profound existential questions like this one. So my radical claim for you today is that it's possible for you to definitively know that reality is not a computer simulation. And I'm going to explain how it's possible to know that. And you know, it's amazing because there are a lot of otherwise we would consider them intelligent people in the scientific community, within academia, in Silicon Valley, who subscribe to these really silly, easily debunkable metaphysical notions of some digital singularity or some simulation theory. And that's what this is called, simulation theory. The idea that everything can be a simulation. And you have big name, credible people like Elon Musk who subscribe to this theory. There are quotes you can find online of Elon Musk, for example, saying that the chances that we're in a simulation are very high, or if we're not in one already, then the chances are almost certain that we will create one in the near future. And then there are quotes from people like Neil deGrasse Tyson, who's supposedly very scientifically minded, or he's regarded as such anyways by the mainstream media. You got folks like Max Tegmark. You've got people like Ray Kurzweil. You've got others that whose names escape me. But there are academics who actually get grants and funding to research this shit. And that's because they don't know how to think metaphysically about these topics. So anyways, enough bashing of them. I like to bash the materialists a little bit, just because how silly it is. So we're going to break all this down here in a minute. A point I want to make before I forget about materialism. So really, simulation theory is materialism on stilts. That's what it is. It's like materialism 2.0. You know, when the old school materialism 1.0 gets boring and uninteresting, then we got, you know, people bringing out the Matrix and all these things, and it makes it sound as though you're being intelligent and metaphysical and really thinking deeply about reality when you're not. And of course, the Matrix movies that were popular in the late 90s and early 2000s, they played a big role in this too. And, you know, the reason that the Matrix movies were such a big cultural phenomenon when they came out is because it was the rise of the internet, the early internet, and the possibilities for the future, and computers was all kind of wide open, and there were these interesting possibilities of what can happen with AI, what can happen with computers and virtual reality and so forth. And so it's only natural that we start to think along these kind of metaphorical lines of like, well, what if life is just a computer or something like this? And so the Matrix movies, though, have some serious metaphysical problems, which we're going to talk about right now. So really, and this is the problem in general with simulation theory, is that it doesn't really understand what it's talking about, because the core issue here when we're talking about whether we're in a simulation is we're talking about what is the substance of reality itself? What is reality made out of? And, of course, if you're a materialist, the way most people are, then you believe it's made out of atoms or some other material substance, maybe energy if you're a little bit more fluid about that. Or maybe numbers and math, like Max Tegmark has this theory where he thinks that, because, you know, he's a mathematician, so he sees the whole world in numbers, and he thinks reality is made out of numbers. And, of course, computers are supposedly, like, made out of numbers. That's what makes computers work and tick. So isn't it only, like, you put two and two together, and then reality is mathematics, right? That's what it is. No, it's none of that. And you can know definitively. Reality is consciousness. There's nothing to reality but consciousness. And what is consciousness? Consciousness is what you and I are experiencing right now. This is it. This is rock bottom. This is as fundamental as reality gets. It's infinite consciousness. Now, that's a very loaded notion. We'll talk about that in more depth. But let's just go back to this idea of a simulation. What does it even mean to say that reality is a simulation? So supposedly that means that right now I'm sitting here talking to you and you're sitting there listening to me, and like, I guess the idea is that actually this is a virtual reality, which isn't the real reality, because this is being rendered where? Where is the Matrix happening? Where is the virtual reality happening? According to simulation theory, I guess it's happening in some sort of computer. But what does that mean? That means it's held in RAM. It's held on a hard drive. It's bits within a CPU. But what is that? What is a CPU? What is RAM, really, if you look at it? Well, it's atoms moving back and forth. It's, you know, bits of electricity circulating around. It's still grounded in a material substrate. See? So if the idea is that some ancient alien civilization advanced very far in their technology and they created supercomputers that were able to crunch trillions of bits per second and all this crazy stuff, and they developed AI and they developed virtual worlds that are indistinguishable from reality, then supposedly they could have stuck us in there. And how would we know that we weren't born into one of those? But of course, you see, all that this does is shifts the problem of the substance of reality. The question here is, what is the substance of reality? It just shifts it back one level. It's the same problem as many theists face when they tout God as sort of the metaphysical origin point of reality. So you ask a theist, well, where did the earth come from? And he says, well, God created it. Okay, well, if God created it, then who created God? Or what is the substance of God? Is God made out of atoms, molecules, chemicals, energy, quarks, numbers, mathematics, equations? What is God? Is God an equation? You see, and then you ask the theist, you keep pushing the theist, and very quickly, the theist has no answer, because the theist has only thought one move ahead. His whole brilliant strategy for explaining reality was to posit some sort of entity, like a god, and then, but then he has no explanation for the entity itself. But the simulation theorists are doing exactly the same thing, just in a different style. Instead of using a god, they're just using a computer. But the question still remains, what is a computer made out of? What is the simulation that the computer is rendering? What is that made out of? So if this is the virtual world here, so then there's a computer somewhere behind the scenes that we can't see. That computer supposedly is made of atoms or something, some sort of substance, right? But then what is this made out of? What are my hands made out of? Are my hands now made out of atoms? Well, you can't quite say that, because atoms are something that are within the virtual reality. So what are they made out of? Pixels? Voxels? What? What is that? And how does the computer create that? How does a computer that's made of atoms and molecules and bits of energy and so forth, I guess electrons we would call them, that are coursing through that CPU, how is that being turned into pixels or voxels or whatever of this virtual reality? How's that happening? See? And of course, the simulation theorist has no answer to this, because there's not even an answer to this question in theory. It's not that they aren't able to, like, do the science to figure it out. This whole model is so absurd, you can't even do science on it. It's that absurd. You can't even run a philosophical thought experiment on it, really, because it's so stupid. It's a deep misunderstanding of how consciousness works. And of course, what these simulation theorists do is they sweep the problem of substance under the rug. They don't want to really go into the metaphysical question of what is the substance of anything. Because you see, when you ask the question, what is the substance of anything? It doesn't matter what it is. It can be a cat, a dog, it can be a video game, a virtual reality, a computer. It can be whatever was there prior to the Big Bang. It could be some alien thing, you know, whatever. It doesn't matter. It can be inside the simulation, outside of the simulation. What is the substance of all of it? See, it doesn't help you to couch one thing inside of another thing, inside of another thing, because it's that classic old Hindu story where they ask you of, like, well, what suspends the earth in space? And so they need to find some kind of explanation for it. And rather than just admitting that, well, the earth just hangs freely in space because it's got nowhere else to go. In a sense, the earth is falling in all directions simultaneously, and therefore it's going nowhere. The earth is going everywhere and therefore nowhere. And so it's just hanging around in the vacuum of space. But rather than admit that, they need to come up with some substance. So they say, well, it has to rest on the back of four elephants. Okay. Why four elephants? Well, I don't know. Just, we know elephants. You know, the ancient Hindus, they knew elephants where they grew up. And, you know, today, the 21st century, we know computers. So we're just substituting computers for elephants here. And then, you know, but what about the elephants? The elephants, they got to be standing on something too, right? Well, okay, a tortoise. They knew tortoises back then, so they use a tortoise. And, you know, today we know atoms, or we know quarks, or we know energy, so we say energy or quark instead of a tortoise, because that's what we know. That's what our best scientists have come up with. Okay, but then what about the turtle? What is it sitting on? And here, you only have two choices, really. Well, maybe three. You can just brush off the question. You can say, well, screw you, you know, we're done. And then you just leave the discussion at this point. Exit the chat. Scientists exit the chat. Materialists usually exit chats at this point. Or they bite the bullet and they say, well, it's just a turtle and it's not supported by anything. Well, if that's the case, why do you need the turtle in the first place? And then, of course, by that logic, why do you even need the elephants? Why can't we just directly say that the earth is not resting on anything? If a tortoise doesn't need anything under it, then an elephant doesn't need anything under it, and the earth doesn't need anything under it. I mean, see, it's simpler. You don't need to come up with weird, magical substances. And then the other possibility, you could say, well, it's turtles all the way down. That's the joke. Turtles all the way down. So that means there's a turtle under a turtle under a turtle forever. Okay, but what does that really mean? Because really what you're citing there is you're pointing to infinity. You're saying there's an infinity of turtles. So an infinity of substances. So one thing nested inside of another inside of another. So you can play the same game with the simulation theory. You can either dismiss this whole discussion and say, ah, screw it, I don't care, which is what most scientists and materialists do. They're not seriously interested in metaphysics because they regard it as something that's just speculative and not tangible. But it's funny because even though they regard it that way, they still are eager to talk about simulation theory and treat it seriously. So that's kind of a hypocrisy. Or what they say is, well, okay, so we'll bite the bullet and we'll just say that it's all happening in a physical computer made of atoms and molecules, just like in the virtual reality, except this is now in the real reality that we don't see behind the scenes, whatever that is. But it's basically made out of matter. Okay, but where did that matter come from? How do you explain that matter? So if some aliens are simulating us, who's simulating the aliens? See? So the mystery is not resolved at all. If you say that we're in a simulation, it only adds an extra layer of complexity to the mystery of existence. Or you can say, well, maybe the aliens, Leo, I got you. The aliens are also being simulated by other, even more advanced aliens. Okay, well, who's simulating those? And then, well, there's even more advanced ones. And who's simulating those? Well, even more advanced ones. Okay, and so it goes on forever. This is turtles all the way down. It's aliens all the way up. Okay, so you're talking about infinity there. But do you really understand what that means? Well, we'll talk about that and what infinity means in a moment. So, how do we resolve this problem? By forcing ourselves to take the issue of the substance of reality head on without trying to avoid it by creating other simulations or other nested objects and other weird substances. Face it head on. What is this that's right here? This direct experience. Forget about stuff behind the scenes. Forget about atoms and molecules and all. What is this right here? This thing we call direct experience. Because this is all you have of reality, is direct experience. Everything else is concept. Everything else is speculation. Your ideas of an external reality behind the scenes or aliens simulating this reality here, this is all something that is being imagined and constructed within this direct experience right now. This can be a little difficult for a materialist to swallow, because they really are addicted to this idea that there's an external objective reality behind the scenes, because they need that to explain what's here. Because if you remove the idea from your mind that there is an objective external reality behind the scenes, or that there are some aliens behind the scenes, or that there is some god behind the scenes up in the clouds running the show, some sort of puppet master. If you get rid of all that, then you're forced to confront the mystery of consciousness right here. You're not putting it off anymore. And this presents a very interesting possibility, which is the possibility that reality is not something that we can't know or can't discover because the thing we're trying to know is somewhere hidden behind some veil that's impossible for us to penetrate because we're locked in this sort of simulated bubble or whatever. We can never get to the aliens. See, this is another one of the popular little kind of corollaries to the simulation theory, which is the idea that if the simulation is so good, if the aliens are so intelligent, they could simulate us so perfectly that we would never even be able to tell that we're in a simulation. And therefore, it's as though it seems like under that logic, simulation theory can never be disproven, and so therefore, we must forever remain open to the idea that simulation theory might be true. Because Leo, what if the aliens are just really, really good, and therefore, even all the thoughts, Leo, that you're having right now are simulated by the aliens, and you would never even know it. And this seems like an intelligent skeptical argument, but it's false. It's demonstrably and definitively false. Let's try to explain why that is. The trick, the magic key that unlocks this problem turns out to be consciousness. See? It just so happens, and there's really no logic for why this is the case, but it just so happens that you have access to reality exactly as it is at all moments, including right now. What's happening right now to you is exactly what reality is. The only question is, are you conscious of what it is? Or is your mind veering off into all sorts of fantastical directions about atoms and molecules and brains and chemicals and external realities and aliens and simulations and computers and electricity and gods and all this? Is your mind doing all that? Or is your mind fully conscious of what's here right now? So if you were fully conscious of what's here right now, you would become conscious of consciousness itself. You would become conscious that consciousness is not supported or grounded in any substance or substrate. Consciousness is the substrate. Consciousness, contrary to the scientific materialistic paradigms and theories about it, consciousness is not something that is happening in a brain or in a body or in a living organism. Consciousness is not something that is being mediated by molecules or chemicals or atoms. Rather, all of those things are distinctions being imagined by consciousness. So what reality is consciousness imagining everything and anything, which is reality. So consciousness is imagining an atom. Consciousness is imagining energy. Consciousness is imagining mathematics. Consciousness is imagining the brick wall. Consciousness is imagining the floor you're sitting on right now. There cannot be a brick wall without consciousness. So science has it precisely backwards, and most philosophers have it precisely backwards. Is they think that first you have all the physical stuff, which is all real, then you have the consciousness stuff, which is all fluffy personal experiences, the human lived experience, and all this, the colors, sounds, sights, qualia, as they call it. And this stuff is all unreal. It's the second order stuff, which is somehow coming from the first order stuff of matter and energy and math equations. This is precisely backwards. What's actually true and real is qualia. Colors, sounds, feelings, emotions, that is what's real. What you're experiencing right now, that's reality. It's so close to you that you are directly interfaced with it. You are not even interfacing with it through perception or through sense organs or through any kind of medium. It's totally raw. Raw consciousness is what's right here, right now. And then here's the complication. The mind then creates stories and imagines conceptual frameworks to try to explain this mysterious, direct, raw consciousness that's here right now. The mind, the ego mind, the human psyche, does not want to admit that reality is made out of pure consciousness. This is a very threatening notion because it throws a lot of stuff up in the air. It makes reality seem less than real, less than solid. And the human psyche has a vested interest in trying to ground itself in a reality. So the human psyche is constantly trying to construct reality. But, you see, to construct reality, you have to construct it in such a way that you're not conscious that you're constructing it. And then that is what we call reality. Because if you were conscious that you were constructing your reality, it would no longer really seem like reality anymore. It would seem like imagination or mind or consciousness. But that's way too much responsibility for you and for the average person, even for the average scientist. They don't want to take this much responsibility for their reality. So the difficulty in understanding what I'm communicating is not that we need better science experiments and we need better technology and we need super colliders and we need mathematical geniuses like Einstein and, you know, Isaac Newton and so forth to tell us what the answers are because we don't have them yet. That's not the problem here. The problem is that we have the answers. We've had the answers to this question for thousands of years. The problem is, how do we get you specifically to understand the answer? Because your mind doesn't want to understand the answer. Because there's a conflict of interest here. To be able to understand this answer would be very threatening to you and to your way of life and to your entire notion of reality. You see, if you start to really understand what I'm talking about here, you're going to go down this slippery slope of realizing that more and more of the stuff that you've thought your whole life was real and true and solid and grounded isn't grounded in anything at all. And that's a very threatening notion. So the problem is that many scientists, they like to hold this to this ideal of thinking that, well, we're objective scientists. We don't care about emotions. We only care about the facts, not our feelings. We don't care about psychology. We don't care about philosophy. We just crunch the numbers, man. We're just purely rational. We stand outside of reality and we use our instruments and microscopes and telescopes and our logic and our reason and our mathematics to analyze what's really there. And then we just report the facts. And we can do that because we're neutral, objective, third-party observers. And Leo, when you start talking about consciousness and emotions and feelings and colors and qualia and direct experiences, this is all human stuff. It's not real. It's subjective. What we care about is the objective. But are you open to the possibility that you have exactly backwards? That there is no objective. There is only the subjective. The objective is something that you're imagining, something that consciousness is imagining right here, right now. So I want you to open your mind to the possibility that rather than atoms, molecules, and energy, and general relativity, and other theories like this, science as a whole, rather than that being the ultimate truth, that is all second-order derivative. The ultimate truth is what you're experiencing right here, right now. This is it. Look at your hand. Take it out. Look at it. This is more real than math, than science, than atoms, than energy. This hand. And this hand is not atoms. It is not energy. It is not mathematics. It is not a computer simulation. It is the colors that it's made out of. It is the shape. It is how it feels. This is reality. Imagine, dare to imagine a reality which is pure consciousness, What is consciousness? Look at it. Don't theorize. I'm not asking you to speculate about what consciousness is. We don't need to speculate. If we speculate about what consciousness is, we're going off in the wrong direction. Consciousness is right here. Take out your hand and look at it. This is consciousness. You have direct access to reality because you are reality. And because you are reality, try to notice, become conscious right now that you are reality. You're not merely inside of reality. You're not merely a part of reality. You're not a biological creature running through reality. You are reality itself. You are the very substance of reality itself. Can you get that right now? Just a little bit. Try to focus your awareness on that. Just a little bit. See? So try to feel it. Feel it. Don't think it. Feel it. What is this space that you're in? You're feeling this space. You're in it. You're aware of it. You're conscious of it. Your consciousness permeates the entire room. Permeates the entire world. Right? This is your life. Try to recognize that if you dropped dead right now because somebody shot you, none of this would be here for you from your point of view. All of it would be gone. It would be so gone that it would be like it never even existed. But let's go a little bit deeper. Because it's more of a mindfuck than you even think. Because if we're saying that all of this is going to be gone, surely what's also going to be gone is logic, reason, mathematics, science, atoms, energy, molecules, experiments, human history, all of those things that you ground reality in, all of those will be gone as well. Because all of those were a part of your consciousness. See? This is a very simple little thought experiment to show you that it's all consciousness. Science is consciousness. History is consciousness. Atoms are consciousness. Even the brain itself is consciousness. The brain here plays a very tricky role because it seems like the brain is a physical object in which consciousness occurs. But that is not actually the case. You got it backwards. The mind is not happening in the brain. Rather, the brain is happening in the mind. And by mind, we is just another word for consciousness. We mean consciousness. You see? So, because you are reality itself, consciousness, it's actually impossible to do what the scientist's ideal of science is. It's impossible to step outside of science and be an objective, impartial third-party observer and a reporter of objective fact. This is impossible. Because you're intimately involved with reality itself. See, if you were separate from reality, you could look down upon it. But you can't do that because you're not separate from reality. You are reality. And there's nothing outside of reality because reality, by the definition of that word, reality means everything that's real, everything that exists, everything that's true, everything that is. See? So if you think you can step outside of reality and look down upon it, well, what are you stepping into, so to speak? So if reality is over here and you step outside of reality and you look at it, so where are you and what are you made out of to look at reality? You'd have to be made out of something real to be able to look up, down upon it or think about it. use reason or whatever, or to communicate it even to your own self. You couldn't do that because all of those are parts of reality. Communication, thinking, reason, science, this is all part of reality. And all of this is a ball of consciousness. But now, of course, the skeptic comes in here and says, well, Leo, okay, yeah, maybe conscious, maybe it is all consciousness. But how do we know that consciousness is not being generated by some sort of computer behind the scenes? Well, for this, you need to become fully conscious of what consciousness is. What is consciousness? That's a very deep question. And again, here it might seem like, well, okay, Leo, we've hit a dead end because now it's not possible to know. Philosophers have been asking the question, what is consciousness, for 2,000 years, and we still don't have the answer. Scientists, they still don't know. It's a giant mystery. No, it's not. It's not a mystery at all. Well, I mean, it is a mystery, but you can become conscious of what consciousness is because you're conscious. But the problem here is that consciousness, because it's an immediate thing and you are it, the only way you can know what consciousness is by you being conscious of it. That means a scientist can't do it for you. You can't read what consciousness is in a textbook. You can't write down a mathematical formula for what consciousness is. Because the formula itself is within consciousness. Because the textbook itself is a part of consciousness. You can read 1,000 or even 1,000,000 textbooks for the next 1,000 years, and you will still not understand what consciousness is. Because those are various forms, all those books are various forms arising within consciousness, but they can't tell you what consciousness itself is. See? Because again, to understand what consciousness is, you have to hit the nail square on the head. And you can't veer off with your mind into some direction about, oh, well, maybe consciousness is atoms. Maybe consciousness is computers or something. No, 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 no. Consciousness is what's right here. Furthermore, what consciousness is its distinction. And that's what reality is. Reality is distinction. Consciousness is that which imagines distinctions. That's what mind is. I'm using consciousness and mind interchangeably in this talk. So if you can imagine the difference between any two things, that is how reality is constructed. So reality and consciousness are not constructed out of molecules and atoms and energy and brains and stardust and whatever else you want to imagine, time and space and all that. But rather by the distinction of those things. Those things are all distinctions. An atom is a distinction. Energy is a distinction. A brain is a distinction within consciousness. Stardust is a distinction. So when we talk about stardust, you're thinking about stardust. That's what stardust is. It's what you're thinking it is. It's what you're imagining it to be. And notice how, in order for you to think something, it has to be distinct from some other thing. So the only meaning that the word stardust has is precisely the difference between it and everything that's not stardust. The only meaning of an atom is that it's distinct from the opposite of an atom. What is the opposite of an atom? A non-atom. Everything that's not an atom. And so on for everything. So here's the key problem with simulation theory, is that it doesn't understand that consciousness is distinction. It doesn't understand, it's not conscious of what distinction is. And so simulation theory says that reality is a simulation. Without understanding that a simulation is a distinction within consciousness. So in the simulation theorist's worldview, there is something which is a simulation, and then there is its opposite, which simulation is defined against. So if you say that reality is a simulation, you must also imagine the opposite of a simulation. See, what you're doing here is you're creating a distinction, or you're cutting reality into two. Now your reality, on the one hand, you're saying reality is made of, reality is a simulation. On the other hand, you also have to say that, well, but then there must also be something that's not a simulation. And so that's what simulation theory is, basically. Is it's like you have a simulation, which is supposedly our world, and then you have something behind the scenes, that thing which is not a simulation, the real reality, because you've divided reality into two. And so now you're placing this part and making it dependent on this part without realizing the interconnection between the two parts. And what's being missed every time you're making these distinctions without realizing what distinctions are, without being conscious of them, is you're separating reality into different substances. For example, you say, well, that table's made of wood, that glass is made of silicon, that plant is made of carbon, that human is made of water, and you treat the world as though it's made of these different substances. Carbon, water, silicon, wood. You know, the ancients had earth, fire, and water, and air, and this, you know, the five elements, and all this kind of stuff. But I mean, you know, now we science has taken that idea and just expanded upon it. We have quarks, and we have different kinds of subatomic particles. We have leptons and protons and antineutrinos and this and that. I mean, anti-quarks. Science just keeps coming up with more and more of this shit every year. More new substances, more new elements are added to the periodic table. But what's being missed in all this is that reality is not actually made out of these things. These aren't real things. These are distinctions being imagined by consciousness. Consciousness is the only real thing, and it's one, it's singular. There's not many consciousnesses, there's only one consciousness. The whole universe is one single consciousness. But it can draw these different distinctions, because that's what consciousness does. Is the only thing consciousness knows how to do is draw distinctions. That's it. So it draws these distinctions, and it can separate itself or reality into parts and make it seem as though reality is made of different parts and different substances, when really it's all just one, but partitioned. These partitions, we might think of them as virtual partitions. Like if we take a giant piece of paper, blank white paper, and we take a pencil and we start drawing lines across the paper, dividing the paper. These are all virtual lines. It might seem like we're cutting the paper in half. We're really not. We're just drawing lines. And then we're imagining that the two different halves of the line are two different pieces. But ultimately, if we look at the whole thing from a sort of a big picture perspective, from the ultimate zoom out perspective, sort of from God's point of view, then what we clearly see is that it's one single sheet of paper with a bunch of distinctions drawn upon it, which allows us to distinguish different objects. See? So here's the thing that the simulation theorists are missing, is that consciousness cuts through all levels of reality. So I'm not necessarily saying that there can't be different levels of reality. There can. What I'm saying, though, is that you need to become conscious that all levels of reality are made out of one thing, which is consciousness. So let's explain it this way. You know, if you really bought into simulation theory, you might say, well, Leo, but just, I mean, I hear you're talking about some interesting ideas here, but just very practically, what do you think is going to happen in the next 100 years? Aren't computers going to get better and faster? Aren't video games going to get better and higher res? Isn't there going to be a virtual reality which is going to be indistinguishable from Earth reality? And then aren't humans going to just naturally want to play these games and play in these virtual worlds? And then Is it really that far-fetched to imagine that a human can just, like, we could take a baby and just raise it in a virtual world and it won't even know the difference? But that's exactly my point. See, simulation theory, and all of science, basically, and all of philosophy, pretty much, any theory depends upon crucial distinctions that it makes. These distinctions have to be unconscious distinctions for the theory to do what the theory needs to do, because otherwise there wouldn't be a theory. So a theory itself is a distinction. But anyways, I'm getting too wrapped up in this. Anyways, to zoom out one level, what I'm trying to say is that in simulation theory, they make a distinction between real reality and virtual reality. The real world and the stuff that happens in a video game. But this is a trick of consciousness. There is no distinction between what's happening in a video game and real reality or your life. That's a distinction that you created and are imagining. So what I'm telling you is something quite radical. See if you can bite this bullet. I'm telling you that Mario, inside of Mario World, is as real as your physical body. And that Mario is made out of exactly the same thing as my body right here. Can you accept that? A little radical. Because, see, we like to believe that us humans, we are the real ones, and what's happening on the TV screen, well, that's not real. Mario's not real. Mario World's not real. But who's making that distinction? We are, of course. And, of course, we draw our distinctions in a self-biased manner. See my episode about self-bias, very important one. We draw our distinction in a self-biased manner in order to create a sense of reality. See? Reality itself is a distinction. Because we need to distinguish, as humans, between reality on the one hand and fantasy on the other. And so we're very, very threatened when the boundary between reality and fantasy is blurred or erased or threatened in some way. And that's exactly what this conversation is doing. It's undermining your entire sense of physical reality, which is why you don't like it. Maybe if you're a special person, you like it. If you want to awaken, maybe you like it. But otherwise, if you're a materialist, you don't like this. If you're a scientist, you don't like this. Because what I'm doing is I'm erasing all the boundaries that you have used to anchor your entire psyche. So, for example, what I'm telling you is that there's no clear distinction between being sane and insane. And you don't like that because you like to think of yourself as sane and you like to think of somebody who's your enemy or some crazy person, some criminal, you like to call him insane. You don't like the idea that maybe there is no difference between him and you. And then when I tell you that there's no difference between an ordinary citizen and a terrorist, there's no such distinction other than what you imagine it to be. You don't like that idea because you like to be able to point to the terrorists and say, oh, the terrorists are so evil, they're such bad people, but we're the good guys. But of course, there is no such distinction. There never was. It's imaginary. And then when I tell you something like, oh, this one, if you're a materialist, you're really not going to like this one, that the distinction between science and pseudoscience, or science and fairy tales and myths, that this distinction is not a real distinction, but something that you are imagining. Oh, you don't like that at all. You don't like that at all because you've built your entire identity around the idea that there is such a distinction. And you have elevated this part of the distinction, the science part, and you have denigrated the part about the myths and the fairy tales and the spaghetti monsters and all this, flying spaghetti monsters. You've denigrated all that, and you've built your whole identity about being this rational, evidence-based person. and you're really attached to that identity, you might have built an entire career around it. Hell, you might have gone to university, you might have gotten a whole PhD based on this premise that there's a difference between science and fairy tales. And now what I'm telling you is that there is no such difference. You imagine the difference. And now you're faced with the real possibility of an existential crisis, because now you have to admit that science itself might be a fairy tale. And you don't want that. You're in denial about that possibility. And so your mind starts coming up with all sorts of stories. Speaking of fairy tales, your mind starts coming up with all sorts of stories about why I'm wrong and why I'm stupid and why everybody knows that science is not a fairy tale. And you're going to point to all this various evidence about why it's not a fairy tale. You're going to point to Einstein and Newton, and you're going to point to men landed on the moon, and you're going to point about smartphones and computers and all this stuff that science is, and Leo, science is so great, you're so demonizing science and so denigrating science. How come science can do these things but fairy tales can't? Well, that's a deeper topic that I can't get into here. It's complicated. Consciousness is complicated. I'm not saying it's simple. It's devilishly, ingeniously convoluted and deceptive. Because it's mind. You are lost inside your own fucking mind. You have spun such a story, so many stories within stories within stories. You've weaved such a tapestry using your own mind that you literally have confused fantasy for reality, and you don't know how to distinguish them anymore. Or rather, your distinguishing of them itself is the fantasy. There is no difference between fantasy and reality. There's only one thing, consciousness. It's right here. Consciousness can imagine a brick wall. Consciousness can imagine a unicorn. But don't make the mistake of thinking that just because you can imagine a unicorn, that necessarily the unicorn acquires the same properties as a brick wall. There is a difference between a brick wall and a unicorn. And that difference we call physicality, which is that distinction that we make. And here you'll say, aha, Leo, but I caught you now. So now you're saying there is a real distinction between unicorns and brick walls. No, you're not understanding how deep this goes. There only is a distinction between a unicorn and a brick wall if you believe there is. If you imagine it to be. And here you say, well, Leo, but I can stop believing that difference, and there still will be a difference between a unicorn and a brick wall. I can touch a brick wall. I can't move my hand through a brick wall, but a unicorn isn't even a material thing. And here is where we're getting up against the limits of your consciousness. So here now, your state of consciousness is the limiting bottleneck. You can't go further into understanding what I'm saying because the state of consciousness you're in right now is so rigid that literally you're not able to be conscious of the lack of distinction between a unicorn and a brick wall. Even if you wanted to, you can't do it. You can't will yourself to do it because consciousness is not the same thing as belief or as willing yourself to do something. So you can sit here for 100 hours and will yourself to walk through that wall, to pretend as though that wall is imaginary, and you will not be able to walk through it. And the reason is because, not because the brick wall is real, but because you're not conscious of how the brick wall is imaginary. For that, you need a radically new state of consciousness, which you don't know how to access. But if you could access that state, you could realize that the wall is imaginary, and then the wall would cease to exist for you as a wall. You see? So there's layers to this. It's quite complicated. It's quite tricky. And it doesn't work as simplistically as you want it to. Because when I start talking about imagination, people get these stupid, naive ideas of like, well, since Leo says everything is imaginary, that means he should be able to just walk through the brick wall. Otherwise, he's full of shit. No, you have to understand that I am a limited consciousness right here. I am limited in various ways. These limitations are what we call physicality. Now, that doesn't mean these limitations are there forever. They're just here now. It doesn't mean that I can control all of these limitations. It doesn't make me Superman. So you have to be careful. So now you might wonder, well, Leo, okay, but you're saying distinctions. So now there's distinctions. And you're saying consciousness, but isn't consciousness itself a distinction? And what are distinctions made out of? Is a distinction itself a distinction? And here is where thoughts and words can't take us. Because thoughts and words are themselves distinctions, you have to become conscious of what a distinction is or what consciousness is. Consciousness is not a distinction. Consciousness is an absolute. It is the substance out of which all distinctions are made. So what are all distinctions made out of? What is the thing? Here's another way to phrase it. What is the substance of the line that separates a unicorn from a brick wall? What is that line made out of? I'm not talking about the brick wall, and I'm not talking about the unicorn. I'm talking about what is the thing that separates the two? What is that made out of? That's an interesting question. Try to contemplate that for a moment. It's not as easy as it seems. How would you even go about becoming conscious of that? Tricky. Or, if you're a scientist, here's a good question for you. What is the line made out of that distinguishes science from fantasy and myth and fairy tales? What is that line made out of? Can you see that the line that separates science from pseudoscience cannot itself be made out of science or pseudoscience? That would be begging the question. Because before the line is drawn, there is no difference between the two. After the line is drawn, there is a difference between the two. But what is that line made out of? And the answer is consciousness. But then what is consciousness? Well, consciousness is nothing. It's absolutely nothing. Which means that distinctions are absolutely nothing. This nothing is so nothing, it's a complete absence of substance. It's so nothing that to even call it nothing is already too much, because the way we ordinarily use the word nothing and the idea of nothing, that's a distinction between nothing and something. But the nothing I'm speaking of is not the nothing that is the difference between the nothing and the something. I'm talking about absolute nothing. It's a nothing which is one. It's a nothing which has no opposite. It's a nothing which has no properties and no substance to it, which means you can't talk about it, you can't think it, you can't see it, you can't feel it. And yet, it's absolute. And it's here right now. And in fact, it is the only thing that is here right now, which is what all of this is. It's absolutely nothing. So, the key mistake that, to tie this back to our original question, because we've kind of gone deep here, a little bit off track. The key mistake that simulation theory makes is that it posits some sort of other substance. It posits two substances, the virtual world and then the physical, real world. and now there's two. This is like creating that elephant and that tortoise. What needs to be realized that there's not two. There's only one thing happening. Reality is a singular thing. And that the substance of everything is nothing. Not an ordinary nothing. Not the ordinary nothing you're thinking of. You can't think of the nothing that I'm talking about. Actual nothing. Actual nothing is not what you're thinking it is. It's actually this right here. Look at your hand. Pull out your hand and look at it. This is actual nothing. Not what you're thinking about. Whatever you're thinking nothing is, that's not nothing, that's something. Actual nothing is this. But you say, but Leo, this isn't nothing, this is a hand. Why are you calling it nothing? It's not a hand. A hand is a distinction you've made. What is the distinction of a hand made out of? That thing is nothing. Absolute nothing. Nothing which has no opposite, which is, of course, not separate from the hand itself. If all of this sounds very confusing and nonsensical and illogical and contradictory and paradoxical, it is. That's not a bug, that's a feature of reality. Reality is a paradox. Why is there anything here at all? Well, consider the possibility that maybe there isn't, unless you imagine that there is. And the reason that you think there's something here is because you think there's something here. And if you stop thinking that there's something here, something real, there will not be anything here. Nothing real. That's the twisted mindfuckery of consciousness. Now, none of this is possible or makes sense within the materialist paradigm of atoms and molecules and so forth. But fortunately, that paradigm is false because it's imagined. It's made out of imagined distinctions within consciousness. And how can you know that what I'm saying here is true and that I'm not just making this shit up? By thinking through it all for yourself very carefully and becoming directly conscious of what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is found right here. I'm merely describing what you will find if you bother to look right under your own nose very carefully. The problem is that people don't like to look under their own nose. They like to fly off into fantasy land about computer simulations and atoms and molecules and external realities and brains and science and Stephen Hawking and whatever else. Multiverse theories, matter and antimatter. That's fantasy. This is reality. But Leo, you said there is no reality. That's right. Reality is a distinction. But this is what we've got here. It's one thing. It's one. Whatever it is what it is. You can't really say what it is because to say what something is itself to create a distinction. So consciousness is prior to your ability to say anything about it. Because to say anything about anything is something that is created by consciousness. See? So consciousness is the rock bottom. Basically, what I'm sort of saying here, if you want to draw an analogy, it's as though you've lived your whole life believing that the earth is a globe which needs to rest on an elephant, on top of a tortoise, and so on. And what I'm telling you is that there is no elephant, there is no tortoise, there is only the earth floating in a vacuum. Except now, we're not talking about the earth. We're talking about this very present moment right now. You've spent your whole life living and believing that this present moment is grounded in atoms and molecules and history of the universe and big bangs and multiverses and whatever else, mathematics. And now I'm telling you, all of that was fantasy. And all there ever was and is right here, right now, this. And this is nothing. And so in this way, we can know definitively for sure that we're not in a simulation. Why not? Again, this is very important because you're still probably thinking, if you buy into simulation theory, you're still probably arguing with me and you're saying, well, Leo, but still, couldn't it be the case that in the future we'll invent computers, then we'll inhabit them and live in them, and there will be a digital singularity? Sure, we could do that. We have that already. You can go buy a VR headset and put it on. And you can lose yourself in the VR world. You don't even need a VR headset. You can just go play an RPG. Go play some Skyrim or something, or some Grand Theft Auto. It's one of these games, you know, that is engrossing, is immersive. Play one of these games. How do you feel? You lose yourself in the game. It doesn't even matter what the graphics are like. You lost yourself in games back when they were in the Nintendo 64 era. You played some Mario 64, and that thing was ugly as hell. You can go look at some videos of how ugly that thing looks now by today's standards. But you still got lost in it. It doesn't matter how many polygons. Mario could be made out of 10 polygons or a million polygons. It doesn't matter because Mario's made out of consciousness either way. Every video game world you've played in has been consciousness, and it's been as real as your life. It is part of your life, which is why it impacts you so much. Which is why if you're a gamer, you take your game seriously. If you're a film fan, you take your film seriously. You don't treat them as some sort of derivative realities. You lose yourself in these games. Have you played some MMORPG like World of Warcraft or something like that? EverQuest? You get lost in these worlds. People get so lost in these worlds, they die from hunger. You can find cases like this on the internet. People die of hunger from just like playing, or die of tiredness from just playing these games nonstop, just grinding away these games for day after day after day without leaving their computer. Right? Because they got lost in a new world. But it's not really a new world, it's just more the same. It's consciousness. See? So the mistake of the simulation theorists is that they're not recognizing that computers are consciousness. Computers are made of consciousness. Virtual worlds are made of consciousness. There's no difference between a virtual world and a real world. Not really. So actually what I'm telling you here, and this is a possibility that many scientists and simulation theorists and philosophers don't fathom, is that consciousness, because reality is one, consciousness must always cut through every level and nesting layer of reality. So even if we do create a flawless virtual world, and we take a baby and we grow it up, hooked up to this machine from birth, such that it doesn't even know what anything outside that virtual world is. Let's say he grows up in Mario World, Mario Land. And it's a super high res, you know, high resolution, hyper real Mario Land. He grows up in that. According to the simulation theorist, he would be so deluded and so deceived by this illusion that he would never even be able to tell or break out of it. But that assumes that there is a fundamental distinction between the two. And what I'm saying is that no matter how many virtual worlds you create, no matter how good they are, and no matter how many virtual worlds you nest inside of one another, because, you know, we could imagine that you create a virtual world that's so good that it can also have its own simulation of another virtual world that's so good that we can have another one, and another one, and another one forever. So there could be 10, 30, 50, 100,000 levels of these virtual worlds. And so you would think that, well, if these virtual worlds are so damn good and we can just get like a child to grow up in these, he would be so lost in it, so many levels deep, that he would never be able to break out. And what I'm telling you is no, he would always be able to break out, because the truth is, from the absolute highest perspective, all of it is consciousness, just different forms of consciousness, different distinctions within consciousness, but all of it is consciousness. And since there is nothing but consciousness, and since you are consciousness, even though it's easy to get lost in the forms of consciousness, there's always the possibility of breaking free and becoming what we call awake. To become awake is to see through an infinite number of layers and forms of consciousness to realize what consciousness is, cutting through everything. All possible illusion is cut through with a deep enough awakening. Now, there's layers of awakening, and there's layers of of illusion to shed, so a single awakening may not be sufficient. It may not be sufficiently deep. We could imagine in this kind of nested doll scenario that we've been thinking of, these different virtual worlds nested inside each other, that one could awaken from one virtual world, but not yet the next one, and not yet the next one, and not yet the next one. So in this case, we can imagine if there's 10 virtual worlds, there's 10 possible awakenings that could happen. Or there can be one single grand awakening that cuts through everything, where the person realizes that he or she or it is infinite consciousness. Which is the seeing through the entire illusion. And the reason that we can know for sure that there's not one more simulation behind us somewhere, you know, because you would wonder, like, Willie, okay, so if there are 10 simulations, all, you know, 10 virtual worlds nested in each other, and we've awoken from 10 of them, isn't there a very likely possibility that there's an 11th one or a 12th one? How would we ever know if we got to the very end? And so again, Leo, it's impossible to know for sure. And so we must always keep our mind open to the possibility that we're in a virtual world. And my answer to you is no. If you think that, you still don't understand what consciousness is. Because for consciousness to be one, it must also be infinite. And I can't really explain to you infinity here. It's a deep topic. I've explained it elsewhere. Go check out my two-part series, Understanding Absolute Infinity, where I talk about infinity in more detail. I won't explain it here, but I'll just briefly say that when you realize infinity, you cut through all possible virtual worlds. You're totally conscious of consciousness. And you realize that consciousness is one singular substance, which is nothing. And you realize that this nothing permeates absolutely all possible realities, multiverses, dimensions, realms, whatever you want to call them. It cuts through and permeates and creates all of them, and that all of them are absolutely nothing. And here, you're absolutely conscious. This is absolute consciousness. What absolute means is that it's true under all conditions. It's true in all possible universes. It's true in all possible virtual realities. It's the one thing that unifies all things. That, you become conscious of that, and you are free of all illusion. And no evil demon, no Cartesian evil demon, no alien race, no matter how intelligent they are, can ever trap you into any kind of simulation when you're that conscious. You're totally conscious of the entire universe and all possible universes at all possible times, past, future, and present. That's a very unordinary, extraordinary state of consciousness, which very few people have experienced, but this is what is called enlightenment. And this is a real possibility. And if you ever do encounter and reach this state of consciousness, you will have complete understanding of reality. And you will know for sure, absolutely, that reality cannot be a simulation. Because again, a simulation is just one distinction. It's perfectly clear to you once you're awake that simulation is just one distinction, and it's just one facet of the absolute. And so that answers that. Ta-da! There's your answer. This is not speculation. This is not something you should believe. This is something that I invite you to become conscious of, to work towards. And if you keep watching me in the future, I can guide you, share with you methods and techniques for how you can become conscious of this. I have already in the past, in prior episodes. I've talked about meditation, I've talked about yoga, I've talked about psychedelics. I'll be talking about more of all that stuff in the future, sharing more powerful techniques with you. I'll be sharing new psychedelics that I've discovered. I've discovered new psychedelics that mankind hardly knows about, that you can use to catalyze your awakening process and to verify all the things that I say. Everything that I say is perfectly scientific. It just requires your intimate involvement. That's really the only mistake that science makes. It's not that science is evil or super duper wrong or something like that. It's just that science is dissociated from consciousness. Science tries to be too objective for its own good. Science tries to be so objective, it misses the one absolute, which is pure, empty subjectivity itself. Now you might say, Leo, okay, but shouldn't, you know, you talk about open-mindedness, Leo, shouldn't we just be open-minded still? Maybe you're wrong, Leo. Maybe there is a possibility. Maybe you've made some kind of mistake. Maybe there's just a possibility that we are in a simulation. I mean, who really knows? No. If you think that, you don't understand what I'm talking about. You haven't fathomed what I'm saying. There is no possibility whatsoever that we're in a simulation. Because all simulations are consciousness. This is one of those things you have to get. It can't be explained to you beyond what I've already said. You have to grok it. And now here, the skeptic will say, ah, Leo, but prove it to me. Prove what you're saying is true. But again, if you're demanding proof, you're not understanding the depth of the epistemic problem here. It can't be proven to you because what is proof? Proof is a distinction, dummy. You can't prove consciousness because it's right here. Proof is second order. Proof and evidence and reason and logic and argumentation is something that occurs within consciousness. So you can't use it to reach underneath and to grab the substance of consciousness itself. Because the substance of consciousness itself is nothing. How do you prove nothing? How do you prove absolute, actual nothing? Only by recognizing that you're it. It's the same problem as trying to get a donkey to recognize his own reflection in the mirror. No amount of argumentation or proof will work on the donkey. The donkey has to sit and look in the mirror until he goes, oh my fucking God, that there is me. And no amount of science or logic or math is gonna prove it to him. You can beat him, you can kick him, you can cram his face into the mirror, you can scold him, you can call him names, you can call him stupid, and it's not going to help him. The only thing that will work is if he sits there for a long time and he has an awakening. There's no substitute for consciousness precisely because there's nothing here but consciousness. If you can't be conscious of what consciousness is, you're fucked. God himself can't help you. And by the way, God is consciousness. This is God. You get all that? Good. Because I'm done here. I've beaten this horse to death, this donkey to death. Now the work is on you. Happy holidays, of course. Happy New Year. Happy 2019. My next video will be after I come back in 2020. If you want to pursue this further, start meditating. Start doing yoga. Maybe experiment with psychedelics. I don't want to tell you what to do. It's your responsibility to figure out how deep you want to go with this. Start contemplating. You can start reading books on my book list. Very powerful book list I have. Go check it out. Over 200 life-changing books on there. If you read, I guarantee you this, if you read all 200 books, I have a little bit more than 200, on the list, and you fathom everything in those books, and you start to embody even a quarter of it, you're gonna become superhuman. You're gonna become a god among men. If you can do that. And then beyond those 200 books, you won't need to read another book in your life. If you fathom everything that's said in those books. See, the thing with the book list is, and just in general, the thing with reading books is that it's really important which books you read. A lot of people read a lot of different kinds of books. There have been many people who have read way more books than I have, various professors, academics, Nobel laureates, intellectuals of various kinds, who have read thousands of books. I haven't read thousands of books. I've probably read maybe around 300 books in my life. Estimating. But what really distinguishes me from those people is that I've read the right books. I was really, really careful to read the right books. Reading the right books is everything in this work. It's not sufficient to awaken you, but it's a necessary foundation. So if you read the right books, I'm telling you, you won't need to read the books for the rest of your life. Spend the next 5 years reading these 200 books, and you will understand yourself and the world and reality so deeply that you'll be set. You'll be set for life. And then everything else after that will just be minutia. See, and that's sort of a point where I've reached recently, is that I've become so conscious recently that I can't read books anymore. Because anything that I read in a book is like... It's sort of like being Albert Einstein and then being forced to sit through first grade. There's no point. Once you're Albert Einstein, you don't need to go back to first grade anymore. Right? You know what you're doing. So these books will help you to do that. And that's ultimately what I'm trying to do with all the material that I publish on actualize.org, is I'm trying to, one of my goals is to get you to this point where you become so deeply soaked in understanding of life, self, psychology, non-duality, reality, metaphysics, epistemology, culture, dynamics of the ego, self-deception. You understand these things so well that all of life becomes clear to you. Of course, it doesn't mean you're perfect. It doesn't mean you can't make mistakes. I can still make mistakes. I'm not saying everything I know is perfect. But you can reach a certain critical mass of understanding where really It's amazing. It's amazing how deep, and this is one of the most rewarding aspects of this work, which is so difficult to communicate, is just how profound your understanding of reality, self, and life, and humanity becomes once you reach this sort of supercritical mass of understanding. Through reading books, through contemplating, through watching videos, you reach this mass. It takes, I would say it's going to take you 5 or 10 years, probably more like 10 years, for you to reach this supercritical mass, if you're serious about it. If you're just screwing around, you'll never get there. But if you're serious about it, like I was, it'll probably take you 10 years. And man, will that be the best decision you've ever made in your life, that you did that. So many doors and opportunities will open to you that I can't even begin to enumerate them. Your life will change in such profound ways. You'll have amazing mystical experiences. You'll avoid so many traps, so many bad situations, so much suffering will be avoided by having this understanding. You'll have so much wisdom. And this wisdom will be universal wisdom that you can apply in all situations. You'll be able to apply it with your children, at school, in business, at work, in your relationships, in your marriage, in your sexual relationships, in your dating life, in politics, in your life purpose, with your emotions. The power of wisdom is that it's universal, if it's true wisdom. So there you go. I'm done here. Please click that like button for me. Come check out actualize.org. Check out my blog. Find the book list there. Find the Life Purpose course there. I'll have more resources coming out in the future. Go hang out on the forum. Sign up for the forum. It's free. And stay tuned for more. This is philosophy as it is meant to be done. I really despise philosophy done as mental masturbation or as speculation. Real philosophy changes your whole life. Real philosophy rewires your mind. Real philosophy removes suffering. Real philosophy gets you tangible, absolute answers to life's deepest questions. Real philosophy leads to profound mystical experiences. This is not the kind of philosophy that they teach, unfortunately, in most universities. That's bullshit. That's philosophy as mental masturbation. That's studying old dead men's ideas, dead men who were deluded and didn't understand what consciousness was. And now you waste all your time studying their stupid ideas. That just infects your mind with more duality and more ignorance and delusion. Real philosophy is practical. Philosophy, you know what that means? Love of wisdom. Philosophia. Phil is love and Sophia is wisdom. The love of wisdom. That's what actualize.org is. It's my love of wisdom shared with you. And your love of wisdom, which keeps you tuned to these lectures. And your love of wisdom, which keeps you on this journey of thinking about life, contemplating reality, asking deep questions, meditating, doing psychedelics, going to retreats, doing yoga, and other such things. That's love of wisdom, love of truth. And philosophy is the most rewarding activity that you can do in life. And philosophy, of course, is identical to spirituality. These two are sometimes separated in the minds of people as though they're different. They're different when they're done poorly. When done well, they converge, and what you realize is that true philosophy and true spirituality are actually identical. And that's a beautiful discovery to make. And I want you to discover that in your life. And so we have more philosophy to do. So stick around for 2020, and we'll see what comes the new year.